You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
You know, I'm busting my balls trying to fit in here, and every door is getting slammed in my face.
Hey, McCormick, sorry to hear you got caught.
What's going on with Peach's daughter?
Does anybody live in this town?
You know what it is, partner? You got an attitude problem.
Oh, I got an attitude
yes.
problem?
And I'm not the only one who's noticed it, Ren. I mean, we're not living in the goddamn Middle Ages here. We got TV, we got Family Feud. We're not stuck in Leave It to Beaverland here.
Yeah, well, I haven't noticed a wet t-shirt contest in town yet.
Yeah, well, I haven't either. But I'm waiting, patiently.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Yes, man's got hands.
Make love in a hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 59 for the 8th of October, 2011. And the screen should come up. There it is.
You forgot we're
you
on the internet.
I just realized, Dave.
Yeah.
This is show 59.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or 151, depending on which math you go with.
If you're going by 59, then DLC rolls at the same time as you now.
Yeah, well, Film Actually and DLC started about the same time.
That's creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd never thought about that. Go on.
Anyway.
Sorry to steal your thunder for a moment there, Dave.
I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott, self-promoting DLC all over the place.
It's just stream of consciousness with me, man. It's never shameless self-promotion.
And I'm also joined by Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
TheRealBits.com.
Yay!
snap, while we're doing it, why not?
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. And this week we have a pair of reviews. So we're actually going to... We're going to forego news this week because we got a lot to talk about. So, and also, it's been a really piss-poor week for news. There's been a few new posters.
There
hasn't been a lot. You know, I mean, there's little things we could talk about. Things like Arrested Development coming back.
Yeah.
You know, we'll save that for next week. This is the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. We have a pair of reviews. First up, we are going to review a remake of Footloose. And we're going to follow that with Hugh Jackman's new film, Real Steel, the Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie. Although I don't think it actually is officially the Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie, but that's what it feels like.
Wait. Oh, no. We'll come back to
this. I'll come back to that. And we're also doing a brand new list of five. This week's list of five is going to be our favorite movie robots.
Yay!
So there's our list of five of our favorite movie robots, and we will come back to that. Now, just to remind you that we do this show live, and you can watch us record Film Actually live every Saturday starting at approximately 1:30. We're only 15 minutes behind schedule today, so that's
pretty
not bad.
Good for us.
Yeah, it's not bad for us. So approximately 1:30 p.m. We always tweet it out when we're actually doing it, so follow us on Twitter.
Do we?
We try.
That's a strain. We tweet it out when we're doing it, Josh.
Maybe we should.
I'm a little behind on that list then.
I don't know. One of my hands is busy at this
point. And I'll remind people that we carry an explicit tag on this show for Richard. We do this show live every Saturday starting approximately 1:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time now. Boy, did daylight savings creep up on us or what? We were talking about it 2 weeks ago. We were saying, it's in about 3 weeks. And then watching the news that night, he goes, now remember to set your clocks forward tonight. It's like, really?
I'm loving it, but my cows are staying up longer.
And, my drapes are starting to fade.
Yeah, exactly.
Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time is UTC plus 11. Go to geekactually.com/live. And if you can't make it live to the show, we always put up the recordings of the show. So if you want to catch us with all the mistakes intact and everything that may go right or wrong on the show, come and check out the video show. It is kind of fun. And for once, we're using flash encoder again, so the quality of the picture is better because the flash encoder has been crashing, but I seem to have fixed that issue, touch wood. All right, so we start this show as always with a what we've been watching section, and I'm going to get us started because Richard and I saw a movie this week, the Anna Faris comedy now we're not embargoed and I don't think we're going to make this a featured review somehow.
No.
But we saw Anna Faris and Captain America in What's Your Number, which was really, really, I'm sorry, Fox, but it was really awful.
It was one of the worst things I've seen this year. I've basically seen every rom-com that's out this year, and it was one of the worst. It was terrible. I would not put a review up for it, except I'd make a point of putting a review up for everything that I've been invited to see for free.
Yep.
So I have to put it up, but...
But can I just state for the record that I am so glad I didn't pay for this?
Mm.
This was a romantic comedy. Basically, the plot is a woman finds out from a magazine article that she slept with too many men. Basically, they're saying that
the average
is 10 and she's on 19. And so she decides that, so she's not labeled a whore, she decides that number 20 will be the man that she marries, basically. And... In the first, this isn't a spoiler, because in the first 10 minutes of the film, somebody sleeps with her. And so she's at 20. So from that point onwards, she goes back over her entire history, basically looking back on all the people that she slept with, thinking that one of them might be the one that's perfect for her. And that way she doesn't have to go past 20. And she enlists the help of Captain America to help her.
Mm. I would have been better if it was actually Captain
America. Wouldn't it have been better? I mean, he is so far, Chris Evans is so far ahead of this material, or so far above this material, that you sit there and go, why did you even do this? You know? Aside from the fact that he got to stand around naked.
It's not even a contractual thing to Fox, because all of his other stuff has been...
I know.
Or maybe it is.
Oh, it might be because of Fantastic Four. Yeah, he might still be contracted to them. I don't know. Yeah. Anna Faris, though, who I actually quite like. I didn't like her in this. I thought she was really one note and kind of screechy.
She was bad. And this is going to sound horrible, but she looked weird.
I was about to say, let's get really superficial for a moment and say she's had some botched work done.
Yeah.
Because her lips look like she's had botched Botox. And so she looks kind of deformed. No, she does. It's just kind of weird looking. And you sit there and go, wow, this just doesn't work on any level. It's not working.
I've heard her interviewed, and she's actually a bright, funny person. So I think she's above the material as well.
Yeah, yeah. So. I wouldn't be surprised. So yeah, look, I'm going to say to you right now, you might, if you do feel the need to see every romantic comedy ever made, wait for DVD on this one, or maybe even TV. but don't go pay cinema dollars for this. It really isn't good. I'm really sorry to Fox, because, I mean, they did invite us and gave us champagne. You've got to worry about a screening where they give you alcohol beforehand.
Yeah, I worry about that.
I disagree, but I
may have said this before, but I've been given a variety of different free things at the start of films, and you know it's bad when, depending on what you get.
The
more they give you, the worse it is. I mean, we got toys at the start of Green Lantern.
And Maltesers. Don't forget Maltesers.
It was actually the night that I broke a six-month chocolate drought. But I went to see The Tourist ages ago, and I may have said this before, and I've certainly said it on my site. It's bad when you get handed a little bag of goodies at the start of the film, and in there is a slippers, earplugs, and a blindfold.
Not the right things to give. No. What's your number? Stay away. What else have I been watching this week? I saw Real Steel a second time. We'll talk about that in the review. But I took my son to go see it. And I also watched a classic 80s fantasy film last night, actually. I watched Sword and the Sorcerer, which I haven't seen since last year, I guess. I watch it quite a lot. It came out the same year as Conan, the first Conan film. It is the low rent version of all this, with Lee Horsley, but it's a lot of fun, and I forgot how much fun this film is. And it's not great, but it is the best thing that Albert Pyun ever made. Albert Pyun went on to do things like the 1990s Captain America, and he directed the Van Damme film Cyborg. He's a hack director. This was his first film. And as his first film, it was by far the best thing he ever made. And then he went downhill from there. But it's a lot of fun. And it is on DVD, and you can catch up with it if you want to see that. And the other thing I watched, I actually watched the film from The Challenge. Now, I'm not going to talk too much about this because we got to do The Challenge, guys.
Yeah.
But let me just tell you, I got through it. All right. I sat and watched with it. I'll set you up. I'm not going to tell you anything about the film, but I'm going to set you up and say that I watched the whole movie and I still have no idea what happened. I have no idea what the plot was or what was going on. My wife fell asleep and my son sat there the entire time going, huh? Huh? What? What? And laughing. It is funny, though. It is funny. It is. He's right. Okay, and full credit.
We'll have to do this.
Full credit. You guys have got to watch this. Okay, this is Asylum, and we all know that Asylum makes bad films. This is Asylum at their worst. All right, so this is like this makes Megashark look good. All right, so just bear with me on this one, all right? Wow. So it's not a film that I can ever say that I will ever watch again.
Oh.
It's not that kind of bad. It's just really, it's special.
Dude,
awesome. All right, it's special. I don't even think the screenwriters knew what they were doing because they would just start throwing random stuff in. It's like, look, this man's just time traveled. Pardon? Where'd he come from? You know, and then out of the blue, they're being tracked and suddenly this woman just jumps out of nowhere with a samurai sword and starts hacking people up. And it's like, who are you?
You know? Wow.
So watch it. Okay, watch it.
Definitely.
It is one
more. I might even watch it tonight.
But do so. And I bet Susan will fall asleep.
Yes.
All right, so Richard, what have you been watching?
Look, I've seen a lot of films this week. While we're still in our 80s mix, I saw two films, I think, almost immediately after last week's show, which was Can't Buy Me Love.
I remember Patrick Dempsey when he was a nerd.
One of Patrick Dempsey's very first films, and that's
she was hot. What was her name?
Oh God, that was
the blonde girl. Yeah, she was a hot thing for a little while there.
And I'll have to look it up. But basically, he pays the hot girl to
make him cool.
To make him cool.
Yeah.
Then he becomes really cool and doesn't need the hot girl anymore. And there's a whole thing there. It's very standard 80s fodder, but it's a lot of fun. And I saw right after it a very very weird film called Johnny Be Good.
I've seen that too.
Which has got early Robert Downey Jr. performance.
Yeah.
And Anthony Michael Hall.
Amanda Peterson was her name.
Oh, right, yeah. But the weird thing about this film is that both Robert Downey Jr. and Anthony Michael Hall play jocks on a thing. And it's meant to be a bit, that part's meant that you're meant to take seriously.
Yeah. Well, Anthony Michael Hall went through a transition. He went from nerd, and then he played the jock in Edward Scissorhands.
That's right.
And everybody went, what the hell happened to him? And then he kind of played these jock roles. It's like he went to the gym and pumped up. Mm. And then, of course, lately he's been in the Dead Zone TV series.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird film. It doesn't ever decide what it wants to be.
Yeah, I didn't like Johnny Be Good. I remember seeing that when it came out on VHS a long time ago. So.
Quickly.
Wow, I didn't even know that was out.
Yeah, it's I saw it on cable. So
you saw it on cable.
Yeah,
okay.
Quickly running through, I, for some reason, decided to watch Twilight Saga Eclipse.
Why?
I don't know. Well, the new one's coming out in about a month.
Yeah.
I've only ever seen the first one, so I'm going to have to see the third one at some stage between now and then.
All right, let's before you go on, let's make this announcement right now, right here, because this is important. When Breaking Dawn Part 1 comes out, Robin, who wrote those wonderful opinion pieces of the first three Twilight films, is coming in studio to review Breaking Dawn Part 1 first time. Now, because we have a new blanket rule of no more than three in the studio, who's Skyping that week? Or who wants to avoid the film? That's probably the better question.
Just whoever. Let's leave it to
One of us will be, not me, but somebody at this table will be Skyping because Robin is going to be in studio.
Dave.
I'll Skype from the other room. Yeah. just to let you know that Robin is coming in. Mm. She's already been in contact with me about what's your new address and blah. So she's really keen to come on the show. So she's, believe it or not, already pre-bought her tickets.
Wow.
So she's already booked her tickets.
I thought these films were killing her.
They are killing her, but she's committed to going the distance on these. So power to her. They are killing her, and I think she had a lot of health problems by the end. I think they were literally eating her up from the inside. So, but yes, she will be here to actually do that show. And in our chat room, Little Geek wants to know why, Richard. Why?
No, look, it's basically because I want to go. I want to understand the fourth film. It's a cultural phenomenon. I've missed them completely.
That's my word. That's why I tried to sell Dave Kazeki on that, and he wouldn't believe me.
Look, you know, you can't avoid them. And I know now that I'm doing this film reviewing thing, and I'm going to all the press screenings, I'm going to have to see it. I'm going to have to talk about it.
The worst part, though. There was no press screening for the last two Twilight films.
Oh, really?
No, they only gave us press screenings to Twilight, and then the other two just slipped by us. They never did, because Nixco does them. And they never gave us preview screenings, so we may have to pay for Breaking Dawn.
Okay, well, that's not going to happen. I'm telling you right now. I've left this one to last because I only saw it yesterday, and also I saw it with Josh. It'll make a nice segue. I saw two movies that were diametrically opposed yesterday. Last night I watched the new Winnie the Pooh movie, which is fantastic.
The new one.
The new one. It's out on Blu-ray in Australia, but get this, it's only out.
So it didn't get a theatrical.
It got a theatrical release for about a week. And it was only at Reading Cinemas, as far as I could tell. So I had to travel out to Rhodes to see it, which I wasn't going to do. And it was released on Blu-ray. Get this, exclusively through Big W. Do they not want people to see this?
Obviously
film?
Not.
I don't know. And it's fantastic. It's like one of the best Disney animated
movies.
It's
really old
in
school.
Years.
Yeah, the trailer
and
was fantastic.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's quirky. It's funny. It's got everything you'd want from a Winnie the Pooh movie. And it's the animation is gorgeous. But the other film I saw, which is completely diametrically opposed to that yesterday, was Nicholas Vinding Refn's Drive, which Josh and I got along to see yesterday.
Well, actually, don't say too much about that, though, because we're going to do a full review on
absolutely.
That.
We wouldn't.
It's out in Australia in about 3 weeks or 2 weeks.
Yeah, so we'll do a full review.
I wouldn't wreck this film for anyone, trust me on that. Yeah. We went and we both kind of had the same opinion when we went in, which was the fact that we knew we had to see this film. This film has just had so much press. It's ridiculous, and everyone that sees it just walks out like it's God's gift to the earth. And being the skeptic that I am, I went in with incredibly high expectations, ready to rock the film, like ready to just be like, this is all that was wrong with it. And I can't. Was fantastic.
I can't wait to see this film.
It is just mind-blowingly good. It is well acted. It's a great cast, it's well shot, it's got good sound production, it's got a great soundtrack, there's just nothing wrong with it. I mean, I'm sure when I've watched it 6 or 7 times, I might start noticing some small things, but at this stage, it's my pick for film of the year.
It's up there for me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I, again, I'm not saying for everyone, but definitely for me.
Oh, no, it's definitely not for everyone.
Yeah.
No.
the guy beside me, who I would like to call out live on the show, if you watch it, asshole, don't wear a leather jacket and screech and scrout around the entire thing. And please don't go, every time something happens, because it's very frustrating to everyone around you. However,
sorry, Josh.
Yeah, no, it wasn't you. But, apart from that, look, amazing film. And please, please do not miss this film. This will be one of those films that will go down in cult history because everyone that has watched it, I'm yet to meet somebody that went, it was terrible. Like
I am dying to see this film. By the way, there's been a question in our chat room. They're saying, what movie was I talking about? Sorry. Matt actually challenged us to watch the movie Battle of
Los
Angeles.
And I still plan to. The only reason I didn't get around to it this week
isn't
is because,
this isn't the Aaron Eckhart Battle Los Angeles. This is the Asylum made for Sci-Fi Channel Battle of Los Angeles. So that's what I was talking about.
Yep. No, I've got it ready to rock and roll, but I just haven't done it yet. And I actually just said,
my PS3.
I can't believe I actually just used the phrase, I'm ready to rock and roll. So
it's in there. I just haven't.
Well, while you're ready to rock and roll, maybe we should talk about Footloose. What else you got?
I watched other movies. Well, look, I've just got one other one, which is
I was actually only just preempting you, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The only other one that I saw this week was Attack the Block. I finally got a chance to see this film, and I understand the hype now. I can understand why some people aren't going to like it. It's not. It's going to be.
Which film is this, sir?
It's called Attack the Block.
Oh, Attack the Block.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, the press has been kind of either way with this one, and I think it depends kind of like whether or not you can kind of relate in any way to these kind of people.
Allow it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's more of a young person's film, but I think the reason that I can say that I think that it is worth the time is because it is hella original.
Well, I will say that I have actually just managed to obtain a copy of Attack the Block, so I will be watching it this week. So.
Oh, okay. It's interesting because it's like, it's not what you're going to expect. No matter what you go in with, like I had expectations in my mind of what I was expecting to see, and no, just no. Like, and this wrecks nothing about the film, but to give you a kind of concept for people that are considering going out and watching this film, the film opens up Attack the Block is because the block gets attacked by aliens. A group of young hoodlums, English hoodlums, are robbing a lady, and then a car is struck by a meteor-shaped thing. They go into the car to try and steal stuff out of it. The alien then jumps out and attacks them. They then stab it. Follow it across a field.
And beat it to death.
Yeah, and then beat it to death. Then stick it on a pike and carry it back to the block. Yeah. This is your opening. From here, the film just gets weirder. It's amazing. It's a really good film.
I can't wait to watch it. And for those who want to see it, it's a very long delay before it's Australian release.
I think November, December 1 is the preview screening.
On DVD in England. I mean, if you get it from Amazon, you can actually pick up a copy now.
Yeah, so, and even if you're a Blu-ray owner in Australia, we're the same same region as the UK. So yeah. Get the Blu-ray.
So yeah, it is available. So it's not. So for those who are just dying to see it, otherwise you can wait. It is coming.
Unless you're in Brisbane when it's playing at the Brisbane. It's actually the opening film of the Brisbane International Film Festival this year, which is and that's looking. You know, you wouldn't expect that sort of film to open an international film festival, but that's how good it is.
No, but and that's the thing. It's more than just like people are going to go and thinking that it's just an alien film, and it's really not. Like there are some interesting political statements in this film about the way that we view block kids and the way that like this Harry Brown-esque kind of dark hooded horror creatures that we've created these block people into. And realistically, this is just, I mean, they actually talk about it in the film. They cover the culture and they cover the fact that it's like, you wouldn't come in and help us. We're on our own in here.
And
it's like, literally, you can understand why they are the way they are. And it's like, it's interesting that they managed to fit this in.
Weave in the aliens and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's good.
It's that line you said to me before the show when the woman that's in there is like swearing her head off.
Yes, it's like a white middle-aged woman is swearing at these kids and all of a sudden one of them, and you only notice it when he brings it up. He actually says,
you know, Layla, you swear too much or something.
Yeah, exactly. And you actually mentally,
been swearing.
You mentally go back through and realize they've only sworn like a couple of times and it's so funny.
I think we're going to probably feature review that at some point as well.
It's definitely worth it.
We might actually feature review that, seeing as we'll all have seen it within the next couple of weeks. We might actually feature review it early.
We'll do it in time. Even if it's not the official release, we could do it around the Brisbane Film Festival.
I think it's probably a good idea. We might do it as a supplemental review or something with whatever else is major at that time.
Allow it.
All right. Okay, so for our first feature this week, we've got Footloose, directed by Craig Brewer. It is written by Dean Pitchford and Craig Brewer. It is based on the 1984 movie. It stars Kenny Wormald, Julianne Ho. Appropriate name.
Yeah, totally is.
Oh, dear, that's terrible.
Maybe it's Hoff.
Yeah. Andy McDowell. We'll say it's Hoff just to be nice.
Yeah.
Andy McDowell, Miles Teller, and Dennis Quaid. This is from Paramount Pictures, so it's a little bit wordy. You know, have you ever noticed that the ones that come directly from the studios are always a bit wordy?
And it really doesn't need that many words.
No, it really doesn't. It's
I was struggling to fill a whole paragraph with my description.
You should have just taken theirs.
Yeah, I should have.
Right, so Ren McCormack is transplanted from Boston to the small southern town of Beaumont, where he experiences a heavy dose of culture shock. A few years prior, the community was rocked. by a tragic accident that killed five teenagers after a night out, and Beaumont's local councilman and the beloved Reverend Shaw Moore responded by implementing ordinances that prohibit loud music and dancing. Not one to bow to the status quo, Ren challenges the band, revitalizing the town and falling in love with the minister's troubled daughter Ariel in the process. And the source is Paramount Pictures, of course. I think that might be a little bit overblown, but I don't know if he actually revitalizes the town. I'm not sure about that, but we'll see.
Let's hear it for the boy.
Here's the trailer for Footloose. Put on your dancing shoes. We'll come back and tell you what we think about it.
This is Ren McCormack.
We are so happy to have you with us. I think you're gonna love Beaumont.
People gave you crap about that tie yet?
Nah, but the day just started.
Public dancing is against the law if you're under 18 in Beaumont.
Are you kidding me? What do people do here? Just hang out?
Yeah, and other stuff.
I don't want you to see that boy again.
Why?
Because I've heard he's trouble.
Our Lord is testing us.
And it seems to have started when Lynn McCormick came to town.
My name is Ren McCormick. And I want to move on behalf of most of the senior class of Beaumont High that the law against public dancing within the town limits of Beaumont be abolished. I know you got to do what you got to do.
but that ain't gonna stop it from happening.
You gotta love that riff.
Oh, yeah.
That riff is really what kind of makes it. all right, so, Richard.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Footloose?
You know what? I think I loved it. I think wow. I really liked it.
And you know what? You're not alone. Have you looked at the Rotten Tomato score lately?
Yeah.
98%, dude.
You know what? It's because I said this, to borrow a line from The Dark Knight, it's not the Footloose movie that we needed. But it's the Footloose movie that we wanted.
I can't believe you just invoked Dark Knight.
It's not the Footloose movie that we wanted. But it really is. I mean, it completely evokes the 1984 movie, which is a good movie. People might remember when the original Footloose movie came out, they were capitalizing on the success of things like Flashdance and Fame, which had been out, and basically they wanted a Flashdance for the boys.
Not the same company as
it was the same company, absolutely. Yeah. And they wanted to recreate that for the boys. Had a male character who dances his aggressions away. And they did that. And actually, what the really surprising thing was that it also had a really pointy finger at the biggest institution in the US, which is the church.
Yep.
And also launched the career into the stratosphere of Kevin Bacon.
Absolutely.
And had these really good actors in there as well. The fact that it was a great song and dance film as well was almost incidental. But
which is really remarkable because there's actually very little song and dance in it.
Yeah. But the soundtrack is arguably even more famous than the film.
Yeah.
But it is a really good film at the heart of this. So when they remade this, and you've said this before, David, we assumed that it was going to be the stage adaptation.
The Broadway musical.
Right. No, they've in fact gone back and... I think you use your phrasing in my review as well, which is they've restaged this film in 2011
like a stage play. They've used the same book. The dialogue is almost identical in many scenes.
It's like they picked it up from the seams and said, "Let's drop it in 2011 and see what happens." Yeah. And you know what? It's still relevant. It's still good.
Yeah. So. I looked at it and when I came out, I said, "This is Footloose for this generation." Mm-hmm. That's all it is. It's just taken exactly the same film, dropped it into this generation, and put this generation's actors into it.
So even the dialogue's the same.
Yeah, all they've done is they've trimmed a couple of scenes, or they've added a couple of scenes. Mm. But other than that, where the scenes are the same, the dialogue is the same. I mean, they've literally just used the same script. To say that it's written by Dean Pritchford and Craig Brewer is actually kind of wrong, because
it's written by Dean Pitchford, because who wrote the original
film, you know, and it's like it's his screenplay.
I think that the extra little bits and pieces are probably Craig Brewer.
Right.
But it is exactly the same screenplay.
I actually liked the film. I thought the film was okay, and it's one of those films where I came out, I think you liked it a lot more than I did. I actually came out and said it's an above average film. It was a very interesting experience, because we have bitched and moaned and complained about remakes on this show for the last couple of years. And one of the things that we've either gone from one side of the spectrum, which is, why did they even bother calling it that movie when it's so disconnected from the original film that it's not even a remake? Why bother calling it that? The Clash of the Titans, right? Or we've gone the other way, where we said, don't make a shot-for-shot remake, that's terrible, a la Psycho. Right? We've always said what they need to do with a remake is try and keep the essence of the original film, keep the core elements, make it so it is what we know, but then make it fresh and new.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Fright Night worked quite well. This film is exactly what we've been asking for, which is take the original film and remake it. Not shot for shot, but it is the same. It's like a restaging of a stage play. They've taken the original script and remade a new version of Footloose. And now that I've seen that, I don't think that's what I've been looking for all this time.
It's the funny thing.
I want Fright Night. I want them to make something fresh out of it, you know?
You could make the argument, like, you know, if it's going to restage it, why even bother at all? And I dig that
as well. But you say that about theatre as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's the film has never been any different to theatre in the sense that they do restage films every couple of years. From the earliest days of cinema, I always evoke the Universal Monster Pictures, which there was about 7 movies in you know that came out. You know, these are the old. You know, we think there's a lot of sequels now. We got nothing on the 40s.
No, absolutely.
You know, there were serial films in those
and
days.
And not only did they have serial films, then they had spin-offs of the serials, like Frankenstein meets Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, you know?
Exactly, which it's is like, two series coming together.
That's right. So it's like, they did it all the time.
Yeah, and so look, I think this was inevitable. there wasn't really... I mean, there's been a little bit of a dance craze because of Glee and things like that.
Well, this is definitely capitalizing on Glee.
This is definitely capitalizing on Glee in the same way that we had all those few dance movies coming out around the time of the High School Musical being really popular. And that's had its day. And this is what it is for 2011. And I just say, thank God we didn't get one of those things where they kind of said, yeah, let's do Footloose, but throw in a whole lot of hip-hop dancing and do that.
And change the tone
and make it a, you know. And there's a whole lot of those films that have come out, those step-up.
See, what's really interesting is that the soundtrack album that we were playing during the break, it doesn't reflect the movie at all. Because the soundtrack album are all covers and all redos and blah, blah, blah. In the film, they're using the original versions on the most part. And so it is, I'm pretty sure it's Kenny Loggins' Footloose that opens the film. And it's like the soundtrack to the film is almost identical to the soundtrack of the original film.
The
soundtrack they've decided to redo.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't understand why they would. It's like, let's market a new soundtrack. We can make lots more money by putting out all these covers.
Yeah.
But, well, I imagine that they probably, I mean, like, what would you do? Like 20th anniversary style, just re-release the original soundtrack?
Well, you release the soundtrack with all of the remixes of the songs, because they're all much, if you listen to the, because I've got both soundtracks, and if you listen to the original soundtrack, it's really interesting because it's that 1980s recording.
Yeah.
And so it's actually kind of hollow sounding, whereas music today is recorded with a lot more lush. It's a lot more body to the music today, and all the mixes of the songs for the movie have that really good solid body, lots of bass that come through the 5.1 really nicely and everything else. So when you actually play the two soundtracks side by side, you can really tell that the original soundtrack really feels dated. And so you sit there and go, okay, so you release a new soundtrack with all these new remix versions with all this good body behind it, but instead they decided to release an album that is all covers.
Yeah.
Which is a really odd thing to do. So if you're buying the soundtrack for the movie, you're not actually getting the soundtrack to the movie. You're getting a soundtrack that is like the movie, but not quite the movie.
Yeah. I mean, and the covers are pretty straightforward covers. They're not reinterpreting.
And look, and Warmold's version of, not Warmold, what's his name? I've got his name here. Not Warmold's the actor, isn't he? Blake Shelton's cover of Footloose is awesome. The one that's on the album is a really good cover.
Yeah.
My son was hopping and bopping here yesterday when I was preparing the show.
It's a good tune. It hasn't dated.
No, it hasn't dated, and it's a really faithful redo.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, that works. But that's the soundtrack. The movie, on the other hand, is a really straight retelling.
Yeah.
And look, I didn't hate it. I actually quite enjoyed it. I just felt that I'd seen it all before.
And you had. I mean, the thing is,
and that was the problem. I just felt like I'd seen it all before.
We both watched the film pretty close to each other. But I mean, I like, I'm a big fan of musicals.
Yeah.
And I go to see live theatre musicals as well. And to me, this is the same sort of thing. It's kind of like a musical revival, if you will.
Yeah, you could think about it that way.
And I didn't mind it on that level. So I know it's exactly the same movie, but, you know, I think you said it best with, like, you know, if they've taken the original text, they've restaged Shakespeare or whatever.
Yeah,
look,
they've restaged a movie.
Let's not compare Dean Pitchford to Shakespeare, but...
No.
But there is a solid story at the heart
of it. The real star of this movie is Craig Brewer. I mean, he has done an excellent job putting this film together and working with the material that he's got.
It's a slick-looking film.
It's a really slick-looking
film. The casting is quite good for the most part.
But they're all a little bit hollow.
A little bit hollow. And I've got to say, Kenny Wormald is... I remember we got the press for this, which was he is the next Kevin Bacon. It's like, well, no, he's playing the same role Kevin Bacon did 27 years ago.
He's not even in Kevin Bacon.
He's not in the same... Like, Kevin Bacon went into the stratosphere after this to a point where he was only 6 degrees away from any other actor.
Yeah.
He is, you know...
And Kevin Bacon in the original Footloose doesn't actually give a stellar performance.
No.
But there was something about him...
He was charismatic.
He was charismatic. There was something about him that made people pay attention. No. Wormald doesn't have that.
And Wormald's that, and it's a funny thing too, when we talk about sensibilities changing, Wormald's this really handsome, pretty boy, you know, he probably waxes his chest and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Kevin Bacon had this feeling as though he was just another kid from Boston, you know, and you really got that feeling.
With a Brooklyn accent.
Yeah, it was weird. But what we both said this...
The opening clip, by the way, on this episode is from the original film.
Yeah.
So.
And what we both
said... I've got an attitude problem!
We really wanted to play the clip with... John Lithgow from the thing about music.
I was looking at that clip and I was pondering it. The problem is that the part that we could use is so short that it was like, I just couldn't use it. But the part where he's talking about classical music being uplifting and he's so creepy.
It's very creepy. And what we both said on the night would have been really good to see Kevin Bacon cast in the John Lithgow.
Yeah.
Role, which is the Dennis Quaid role. And Dennis Quaid does a fine
performance. Quaid, and look, and Julianne however you want to say her name, Hoff, is... You know, she's pretty and she's got boobs and butt and, you know, and everything.
A lot
else.
Of midriff. Yeah.
And a lot of midriff. But she's hollow. There's just nothing to her. She is as bland as they come.
No, she was obviously chosen for. She's eye candy. She's done some musical type stuff before. So both Kenny Warmold and Julianne
Hoff
can move. They're experienced song and dance people. And they will be in future song and dance things looking at their credits. Dennis Quaid's weird choice because he's obviously a known actor, and we've seen him in a lot of things. Doesn't really bring that sinister edge that Lithgow brought to it, but he doesn't really have a presence per se. And the real disappointment was Andie MacDowell.
I was about to come to her.
And you said this the best on the night, which was that you don't believe that she is a submissive housewife.
Yeah, okay.
You
so in the original film, name please.
It was Diane Wiest.
Diane Wiest. Mm. Diane Wiest is this little meek little mouse. Right. Mm. And when she finally says, sit down and let him talk.
Mm. It's a big moment.
It's a big moment because she's finally speaking. She's the little submissive wife of the preacher. Right. Mm. And when she says to the preacher at one point near the end, for 20 years, I've stood by you and been silent.
Yeah.
But not anymore. You believe her and you believe that there is weight behind that. And Diane Wiest is a wonderful actress. And there's a lot of weight that comes out of that. Andie MacDowell comes across as that Southern housewife.
Yeah.
And when she says, for 20 years I've stood by and been silent, you go, no, you haven't.
Yeah.
You've been out there telling him exactly what he has to do, you know? Yeah. So you don't believe that moment, you know? You believe that she's a really strong woman who's probably behind her man and everything else, but she's strong. And so I didn't believe... The dialogue didn't sit well with the character that she was playing.
Mm. The best performance by far in the film is Miles Teller, who plays Willard, the best friend. And he actually works as a better companion for Kenny Wormald's character, for Wren, than Julianne Hough ever did.
Can I actually say, I actually preferred him to Chris Penn.
Yeah, look, Chris Penn is great. And I was watching bits of the original last night because I was writing up a piece on the original for my 80s column. And so I was watching the scene where Chris Penn was learning to dance. It's a great montage.
Yeah.
He's classic, goofy sort of scene. But there's something about Miles Teller that's talking about. He's Miles Teller is probably a better actor.
And a better dancer.
Miles Teller, people might remember if you've seen Rabbit Hole, he was the kid who was responsible for the major event in Rabbit Hole. So he's a good actor and he's someone who can go toe-to-toe with, you know, Oscar-winning Nicole Kidman. Although I've got problems with her. You know, toe-to-toe with him and Aaron Eckhart in a dramatic stage performance in a big film. He is a good actor. He brings a lot of warmth and genuine... He's the most accessible character in this.
He's not the...
So could have seen, but at the end of the day, the real star is the aesthetic of the film.
Yep.
So a few, and I like the little nods they have to the original. They do change a few things. There's the famous tractor race in the original one. They all hop on tractors in this film and then drive about 5 meters, get out, and get into these blinged up buses where they have this kind of death match race.
Which is actually kind of a good scene.
In the trailer, you see a bus exploding. I was like, how the hell are they going to work that into Footloose? As it turns out, quite well.
Yeah, they did. One of my major complaints with the remake was the fact that it's been completely sanitized.
Well, this is one.
And this is actually one fairly major complaint. The original Footloose was made in an era where we were a little bit darker in what we were doing. And so we've got the kids walking around sucking beers and smoking cigarettes. And we've got the scene where she breaks up with her boyfriend. She gets the crap beaten out of her.
Oh, in the original. I was watching that scene.
No, the original. Yeah, I mean, she gets the crap beaten out of her. The fight at the end is brutal, you know? And in this film, they've sanitized it all. There's barely a beer, no cigarettes to be seen. When she gets beaten up, it's a slap across the face. And the fight at the end really is like an afterthought.
And speaking of slaps across the face, it's... when she says in the original, when Laurie Singer says to her father, "Daddy, I'm not even a virgin," and he slaps her, you kind of believe that this is a major shock to him. In this one, you expect him to go, yeah, no shit, shit, sweetheart.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, exactly. Like,
you've been walking around in shorts no bigger than a handkerchief, and you know, yeah, I kind of guess.
Yeah, if you bend over, we can see that you're not a virgin. Virgin,
absolutely. Yeah, you know.
It's like, sorry, Josh.
Did not need that image.
But yeah, no, I agree. So it's all been very sanitized, yeah. And it's been clean. You can imagine this would easily go out with a PG, you know what I mean?
Which is probably what they're going for. I mean, it is a film that does, like, the original film was criticized. When Roger Ebert reviewed the original film back in 84, he actually said, and I was reading that review last night, he said, this film tries to do three things and does none of them well. He hated it. He hated the original film. He was basically leveling it as a music video aesthetic, which, you know, tried to sell records. And, you know, I disagree completely. I think the original actually had a lot more in it than people give it credit for. This new one does, I think, is trying to do that. It is doing that more than the original ever did, which is, it is all about the aesthetic.
And it is trying to sell records.
It is trying to sell not only this, but the nicely timed Blu-ray copy of the original film.
Right.
All those sorts of things. It is a marketing exercise from Paramount. But, you know, a fairly successful one, and I enjoyed it.
It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I enjoyed the film. I thought it was okay. If you want to go see Footloose for the new generation, absolutely. You're not going to be disappointed. It's not a terrible film by any shakes. It's okay. I just felt that it was... what for me, it was an above-average movie.
Mm.
It's not much more than that. It's not a masterpiece. I think in 10 years' time, people will still be watching the original Footloose, and they'll have forgotten
this. And if you haven't seen the original Footloose, please do. There's heaps of copies around of it. You can get it really cheap on DVD. Usually it's a part of a...
it's usually with Flashdance and Staying Alive.
Or Pretty in Pink or something, actually. Yeah. I've got a box set at home. It's Footloose, Flashdance, and Pretty in Pink. And it's best box set ever. Really.
I would have put Staying Alive on there. That's the three films.
But it's also just out on Blu-ray this week, and it's pretty cheap. So
I'd like to see it on Blu-ray. Actually, I'd like to see
it. I've seen screenshots, and it looks pretty good. So.
Fantastic. All right. So, and you're going to recommend it to people?
I will recommend it.
Yeah.
Easily.
Excellent. All right. Let's move on. Let's get Josh back in the picture here.
All right.
Let's get ready to review.
Don't say that. We have to pay rights on that. All right. Next film up for this week was... It's big week for films. So next film up this week was Real Steel, directed by Sean Levy. It is written by John Gattanus, based on a story by... Dan Gilroy and Jeremy Levin, and in part, and funnily enough, not mentioned on IMDb, but is mentioned in the opening credits. It is based in part on a short story, Steel, by Richard Matheson.
Which was adapted into a Twilight Zone episode.
There you go. Richard Matheson, for those who don't know, wrote a lot of Twilight Zone and so forth. A very, very, very famous sci-fi writer. It stars Hugh Jackman, Dakota Goyo, Evangeline Lilly, Anthony Mackie, Kevin Duran, Hope Davis, and James Rebhorn. Set in the near future, and once again, this is from the official synopsis, and I've actually abridged this, all right? So I've abridged this down. Set in the near future, where the sport of boxing has gone high-tech, washed-up fighter Charlie, who lost his chance at the title when 2,000-pound, 8-foot-tall steel robots took over the ring, is now nothing but a small-time promoter, earning just enough money piecing together low-end bots from scrap metal to get from one underground boxing venue to the next. When Charlie hits rock bottom, he reluctantly teams up with his estranged son, Max, to build and train a championship contender. As the stakes in the brutal, no-holds-barred arena are raised, Charlie and Max, against all odds, get one last shot at a comeback.
I've heard that somewhere
bump,
before.
Bump, bump, bump. All right, so if you thought that sounded familiar, it is a synopsis for Rocky, Karate Kid, I'm sure there's about four others, Raging Bull. this film really is... Rocky meets robots. But let's have a look at the trailer, and we'll come back and talk about this.
Charlie, where is my money?
Buddy, I got your money. It's right here. Oh, good. But
Charlie, you're
losing your belt.
Wait, Charlie, hey. I can't hear what you're saying.
What was he like? As a boxer? Charlie was the top contender, number two in the world. Then the fight game changed.
Coming with you.
No, you're not.
I'm either coming with you or you're fishing for your keys in the sewer.
Oh my god, that was close.
Whoa!
Stubborn kid.
This ain't a video game. This is for real. Let's make some money!
I just need a little loan.
As much as I like you, dude, you're a bad bet, brother.
Give it up, Charlie. You got nothing left.
What are we looking for?
Anything I could use to put a fighting robot together.
I think there's a whole robot in there.
Never seen anything like it before.
Can we get him a fight?
He's a sparring bot, built to take a lot of hits, but never dishing out any real punishment.
His name is Adam. Get him a fight.
You know you're bringing him home in pieces, right?
Whoa, whoa, whoa! He's smaller and weaker. He's gonna get his ass kicked.
I need you to teach him to box.
Are you kidding me?
You know this fight game inside and out. He needs your moves, your commands.
I can't.
Yes, you can.
And I know I've done all kinds of wrong by this kid. I'd just like to do one thing right.
Right uppercut!
Great fight, fellas.
Remember this name, Adam.
Adam!
This bot is one to watch.
I'm trying to see a better side to you here, Charlie.
It's not easy.
Can we?
We'll see.
And at this point, I think I need to say, let's make some money! Sorry, I couldn't resist. All right, I'll start us off. I got to say that I've seen this film twice now. I saw the film at the preview screening, and we have mocked this film, and we have joked about this film for better part of a year and a half since it first got announced. We basically say it's the Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie. I know that the Real Junkies Boys, not the Real Junkies Boys, sorry, Charlie and Brad over at Rebound Radio basically like to pretend like this film doesn't even exist because they're ashamed that this movie's even being made. And I actually had to tweet out to them the other day and say, actually, give it a thought before you say that, because I was pleasantly surprised this film. I thought it was a lot of fun. And yes, it's derivative. Yes, it is Rocky. I mean, even the closing scene feels like Rocky.
Absolutely.
I mean, the film is Rocky with robots. It's got a lot of Karate Kid elements in there. It is incredibly derivative. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it was surprisingly emotive. Surprisingly, it worked. On many, many, many levels for me. I thought the fight scenes were really good. I thought the robots belting into each other was remarkably well done. I thought the way that they handled the relationships between them and the robots was actually kind of interesting. And I really liked the kid. And I didn't think I would.
No, but who we were talking about before was actually who played the young Thor.
Yeah. And I thought he actually was very, for a father of a 12-year-old, I thought he was a very real 11-year-old.
Absolutely.
And some of his actions and stuff were, one of our good friends, Spotlight Reports Jorge, actually came out and said the kid was really annoying. And I said, you obviously haven't hung out with many 11-year-olds. You know? I mean, that's really what 11-year-olds are like. And he was, I could feel his emotions coming from him. I could feel his heartbreak with his father, and I could feel his joy at the end. So I thought he did a really good job. He's no Anakin Skywalker. You know, he holds up well. Josh is disagreeing with me over there, but that's okay.
There's one cringeworthy line in the film, which is, I want you to fight
only
for
one?
Me.
Yes.
And I that was the one point where I thought, no, you didn't. And but, you know, like, you're right. I think it's going to be far too easy to dismiss this as Rocky with Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Because, you know, I think that would be sort of ignoring. I mean, I think the fact that it has the audacity to go toe to toe and have those comparisons made, because when you step into the ring, as it were, with Rocky, people are going to make the kind of, and not favorably. Rocky is a great film, but you strip away the facade of those two films. They're both about broken people trying to get their lives back together through the one thing that they know, and that's fighting in both cases, which is just a pretty messed up environment to raise a kid in. But the other thing is, you know, we've already seen a movie this year which shows what happens when you pitch robots against each other with no human heart at the start of it, at the heart of it, which is Transformers. This does the opposite. This does exactly what I thought it wasn't going to do, which is actually provide an entertaining family film with robots beating the snot out of each other.
And that's a very important point here, which is that it is a family film. And what was really interesting was the second viewing for me was actually the viewing where it went from being a 3-star average knockabout robot movie to a 4-star film.
Mm.
Because suddenly I sat next to a 12-year-old watching it who got so excited during the fight scenes that he was literally, hands were at his face and he was kind of moving like this with the whole, he was so excited, he was so moved, he was right there with the whole film. And I'm sitting there watching it and I'm getting this energy off of him thinking, this is exactly who this film is aimed at.
Yeah.
And it is, Nicholas came out and just said, I loved this movie, you know? Yeah. And you sit there and go, that's who it's aimed at. He related to the 12-year-old.
Mm.
It was taken through that journey for him through that 12-year-old, and we, the parents, get to take it through Hugh Jackman's role.
Yeah.
And so in that situation, you sit there and go, wow, that is actually structured almost perfectly in that situation, you know? And yes, it's a little bit manipulative in parts and so forth, and it's not a perfect film, but it is a lot of fun. And I had a lot of fun watching it the first time, had even more the second time round.
I'll definitely see it again. Maybe not at the cinema, but I'll definitely see it again.
Yeah, and I will buy it on Blu-ray when it comes out. Now, we've had Josh huffing and puffing over in the corner, so I really, really want to hear what Josh didn't like about the film. So hit us with it, Josh.
All right, well, look, I'll start out by saying, straight off the cuff, if I was 11 or 12, I completely agree with you. I would have adored this film. I would have adored it because I would have looked past everything that I saw. I looked at this film, and the whole time I was going, it's a family film. It's a family film. And I kept trying to balance myself like that by just going, look, it's not aimed at you. It's not aimed at your cold heart. It's not aimed at your you know, sort of thousands of movies that you've seen. It's aimed at a child, and it's aimed for the child. I disagree with you in the part that this is a film where the adults can relate to Hugh Jackman. I hated Hugh Jackman, and I hated the kid a hell of a lot more. And I hated them both because I didn't connect to anyone in that film. I felt that the kid was hollow. I felt that every line he delivered was cheesy.
Wow, I disagree completely. I couldn't
connect to anything. And to be honest, like, I went with my girlfriend, and my girlfriend was just looking like, she was just like, can we go? Can we go? Can we please go? And I mean, I didn't even notice this until about the 3-quarter mark, because I was sitting there going the whole time, and I looked over and went, oh, okay, cool, I'm not the only one. And again, I understand that as a young kid, I would have enjoyed this. When the robots were fighting, for the most part, I actually kind of enjoyed that, but I couldn't help feeling the sports film mantra to this film, and not the Rocky thing. I'm not isolating it to that. I'm just isolating it to every goddamn sports film I've ever seen.
It's a derivative film. There's no doubt.
And that's
about
my problem with it. I don't, like, I mean, I leaned over at one stage in the first 10 minutes and explained the entire story. I was like, this is going to happen. That's going to happen. They're going to do this fight. They'll have the fight where they do this. That's going to happen. It'll end like this. And he's going to say this line. Sure enough, didn't miss a point.
Yeah,
didn't
miss a single point. But it was the journey that was fun. It wasn't
And guys, you might have connected to that, and you may have seen that. I didn't. I just went. When the robots weren't fighting, I just did not care. I was like, can we just get back to doing something? Because I couldn't go along for a journey where I didn't have any connection to the characters, because I felt, though the 11-year-old was very 11-year-old-ish, he was annoying. And because of it.
Yeah, children like that.
Yeah, children
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely.
children are annoying.
Yep, and children are annoying.
They're like humans, but amplified.
Exactly, and that's fine, man. But
Delta Knight says, finally the sport of boxing becomes interesting.
And look, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, I looked at it, and I looked at it, and I was like, okay, so I can look at it as someone that's done fighting before, and I was like, yeah, the combat's all right, but I'm not really getting into this super, you know, heavily, because I don't feel like the robots, like, I never felt like the robot was on the last legs at all during this entire film. He just kept getting up and kept fighting and
see, that's where I actually really disagree with you, because it was actually something that Nicholas made the observation of, where he actually said that by the time, one of the reasons why he was getting so excited in the boxing match was he actually felt, he was sitting there going, stop hitting him, you know, he was like really connecting with that robot.
But the thing was, the robot just kept getting up, and every time he got up, he was just full strength again. Like, there was no like one arm half broken or anything like that. He was just back up, and he was back into fighting like he had never been knocked down. And I'm like, hold on, this thing's a metal robot, it's being pounded to crap, there's gears and whirring bits. And I know I'm getting technical here, but I'm saying, I just didn't connect to it, because I'm like, you'd have stuff broken. You've been pounded on by something that has broken pneumatic. Here by the end. No, but that was the thing. There was no feeling of that in the ring. Whenever he got back up, the thing just started fighting like it had never been knocked down. And that was my issue. I'm like, I don't get a sense that this robot's been had in the crap kicked out of him. The only times I'm getting any sense that he got the crap kicked out of him is when he falls down and has to get back up again. And those are the only moments. Everything else in the film, he doesn't fight any worse. The other robot does. But this robot just keeps fighting the same way it's been fighting every time it gets knocked down. And the first three rounds, it gets the crap knocked out of it. Also, funnily enough, kids of a younger age maybe than your son do not seem to get the ending of the film because they don't understand how boxing worked.
Yeah, but let's also place the age group of this film. I mean, the film is rated M. Mm. So we are looking at, in this situation, we're looking at a group of kids that are probably anything between 12 and 15 years old. So yeah. We're not looking at young kids.
Dude, that's more of just a flagging knowledge thing. As I walked out of the cinema, I walked past three different family conversations with the kids like, but he won, he bit the crap out of him. And I'm just like, I knew that bit would just fly past kids because they just don't get why he didn't win.
Boxing with points.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it's little things like that. But again, look, kids are going to love it and it's a kid's film. But if you're like me and you need a bit of substance to films, unfortunately, I just felt like this didn't have substance. I felt all of the tearing up, crying scenes were just so overamplified that I was like, I actually didn't connect. Like I was like, no. But I'm in the minority here and I know that and I'm happy to do that. And I'm not going to come in here and be like, don't watch this film.
Absolutely.
I just want people to know that I did not connect to this film at all. I felt that like every line was just from every sports line, every sports film ever thing. The obviousness of the relationship between the kid and the father and where that was going and what it was doing was just too obvious. Everything in this film was a cliche. And I just couldn't stomach it at all. I was just like, this film is every film I've ever seen, and you're going to try and mask it behind a whole bunch of robots. And I'm sorry, if this film didn't have robots, it would have fucking nothing.
Look, if it didn't have robots, we wouldn't be going to see it at all. I mean,
Interestingly enough, just to bring this up before I forget it, you know how you were saying that you don't really feel that there was any connection? Did you notice the fact that when they were pillaging the junkyard, that there's the head of the Rock'em Sock'em robot in one of the bins, and he actually makes the statement, he's like, that's one of the original prototypes, and I was like, that was the one moment I was like, yep. And look, there were still fights where I was still like, yeah, cool, and as a whole, I walked out hollow. I was just like, cool, that's done.
I love it when we have a large range like this.
Yeah.
Can I just say that you're a horrible human being?
Yeah, it's fine.
And you have no heart.
This would not be the first time I've been told
you,
that.
I have no connection to you.
Horrible. As a rebuttal, that I'm going to say that I actually did connect emotionally to the characters. I actually got choked up on a couple of scenes, funnily enough. It was a couple of scenes, and it wasn't Hugh Jackman. It was actually with the robot, funnily enough. It was a relationship between the kid and the robot, where I kind of went, oh, that's really sweet, you know? It's just his reaction to certain stuff, you know? And the fighting scenes in it, I think some of the authenticity also helped with the fact that Sugar Ray Leonard actually staged the boxing matches, which really kind of helped that a lot. And he also trained Hugh Jackman for his scenes at the end when he has to do the boxing.
Mm.
So yeah, there is a bit of authenticity there that helps a little bit. I actually really enjoyed it. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say to people, you know, if you just want to just have a bit of fun and something that you can take your early teenage kids to mid-teenage kids to, this is going to be a good film for you guys. This is going to be a film that the parents, aside from parents like Josh, will actually get as much out of that as their kids will get out of it. Because I've seen it as just an adult going to it, and I've seen it as a father. And in both times, I've gotten something out of it. So I'm gonna recommend it, Richard.
I'll also recommend it. And like, you know, I don't think I connected to the characters quite as much as you. I did think they were good characters, but at the end of the day, it was fun.
By the way, a little trivial point for you, the little girls at the beginning
that
are trying to get the photo of the robot, those are Sean Levy's kids.
Ah, well, there you go.
So a little trivial for you. And let's just really, really quickly just say, Sean Levy, this is the most competent film he's ever made.
Oh, absolutely. It's not hard.
Sean Levy has made some trash.
He has. Yeah. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, and
no disagreement.
When I
me.
Saw Sean Levy was directing this, I went, really? Yeah. But I thought this is Sean Levy actually as a filmmaker.
Mm.
And you sit there and go, wow, you actually put some effort into this one. What happened, you know? So
and that could be it. I mean, I think that we all assumed this was going to be shit.
Yeah.
We all assumed this was a train wreck or a scrap metal wreck
or
whatever.
A bad idea coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think the fact that it didn't suck ass completely One surprised me, but the fact that I enjoyed it so much, and then, like your son, I at the end of it, I couldn't help myself. I was kind of really thinking, oh yeah, get him, you know.
What it really did was really made me want to watch Rocky again.
Yeah,
I mean, I've
watched a lot of sports movies, as Josh said. It does ape every single one of them, but you know, there's a reason that formulas are used in movies, because when they get them right, they're so good.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at...
The reason why The Karate Kid worked so well in 1980, whatever it was because it was a carbon copy of Rocky.
Absolutely.
And it worked because it followed exactly the same beats as Rocky.
I always pull out the example of every episode of Scooby-Doo. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's still considered to be a good show, and you still get a lot of fun out of watching any individual episode. It doesn't mean that the formula's worn. It just means that, you know, it works and you can still have
every
fun.
Every now and again, you got to come out and give it an airing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I wouldn't necessarily say they need to make one of these movies every week.
No.
But...
And look, there is a sequel planned, and I don't think that's a good idea. I think it should just be a standalone. No. Let it go. It's done. It's like with Rocky, he did what he set out to achieve to do. And, you know, he got deemed the, you know, whatever it was at the end. And it's like, you go, that's it. Leave it.
Yeah.
It's done.
The best Rocky sequel was the last one.
Yeah, absolutely. Which capped off the whole series. Yeah. You sit and go, he's an old man now and he's kind of coming to terms
with it. But he still, as he says in the movie, I've still got some fire in the belly. You know?
Yeah. And I go, I really like Rocky Balboa. And I think they go, and if you just shake off Rocky V... and replace that with Rocky Balboa, you sit there and go, that's the series.
Because they kind of ignored, this is getting off topic, but this is, they kind of ignored the fact that in the previous one, he was brain damaged and he could never fight again.
Absolutely.
You know, and suddenly that was cured.
Yeah, or he was going to go blind and all sorts of stuff. All sorts of things. Anyway, that's Rocky. We'll talk about Rocky another day. All right, so Richard is recommending, I'm recommending, and Josh?
No, I don't. But look, if you're 12 or you're taking your kids to a movie, you could do a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, because like, you could have seen The Last Airbender.
Exactly. It's not the worst movie this year, and it's definitely not the worst kids film that you're going to have to drag your kids to. So absolutely. Like, I mean, if you're of that demographic or you have kids of that demographic, you're going to love this film. Mm. If not, and you're a bit of a snob when it comes to film, you may find yourself struggling a bit.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Can I also just say that I am actually very eager for this film to come out on Blu-ray as well, purely because I want to see the behind-the-scenes stuff on the robots, because a lot of animatronic robots were built, and I would love to see where the animatronics and the CG are done, because they're seamless. And there were no point where I was going, that's a robot, that's an animatronic, that's a CG. I want to know where they've actually blended these things together. One rumor or one thing that Hugh Jackman said on the red carpet, which you can find out, was that when they're walking or running, they're CG. When they're like interacting with people, they're robots, they're animatronic. I just want to see the Blu-ray to see that blending, because it is really, really well done.
That is
technologically, it's really well done. All right, we're going to move on here. We do have a little bit of feedback that we want to address. this one's aimed a little bit at Josh, actually. We're going to do our list of five in just a minute. We're going to do feedback first and say, oh, actually, no, we've got some news, don't we?
Do we?
We have a sad passing. We should mention it on this show. We did it on the whole Geek Action show, so we're not going to harp on it. But Steve Jobs' passing also does affect the movie industry. He was the CEO of Pixar.
Mm.
And so Pixar has had a huge loss in their leadership at this point.
And
so,
certainly a champion of early computer animation.
Absolutely. Well. So I think that is. But we have another one for film, actually. And Richard, you've got this for us, don't you?
Yeah, look, Charles Napier died this week. And it's a name that's probably not instantly familiar to everybody. But he sort of debuted in... Russ Meyer films.
Yeah.
I think the one they've listed here on Internet Movie Database is Cherry, Harry and Raquel.
Don't you love Russ Meyer?
But he was also, people will remember him as Harry Sledge in Super Vixens, which is a hell of a movie if you ever get a chance to see it. David and I have been using this, bandying this quote back and forth for the last couple of weeks. You look pretty funny trying to eat corn on the cob with no fucking teeth. you know, he was, he's been in so many films. He's one of those people that if you don't know his name, you'll recognize him.
Yeah, he's got he was the man who sent Rambo off on the mission in First Blood First Part Blood 2.
He was in Silence of the Lambs. He was in Austin Powers. He was in... he's been the voice in a bunch of...
He was the voice in Archer. I never knew that.
Yeah, in Dr. Speltz.
Video, oh, of course.
He's been in countless video games and cartoons. Like, he was the voice of somebody in Quake 4.
He was enormously popular as a character actor throughout the 80s.
Yeah, he did a couple of different voices. He did Warden Grant Connor and Officer Crackney in about four different episodes of The Simpsons. Mm. So there's someone that they got back a couple of different times. He was
in Star Trek.
He did the voice of Zed in
new version of the Manchurian Candidate as well, I think.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was in the new version of the Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah,
That's in there. Like, he's been in.
See, I never remember his name, like you said, but it's just.
I'm scrolling through his credits here. He's done 194 credits to his name.
Yeah.
Animated series. Here's the Simpsons connection. He was in 23 episodes of The Critic, which is Simpsons. It stinks. But he didn't play, that was John Lovitz.
Yeah.
He played a character called Duke Phillips, which was a recurring character throughout that. But as I intimated before, David and I best know him from the Blues Brothers, where he played the lead singer, or presumably lead singer of the Good Old Boys.
The Good Old Boys,
yeah. Who
were the Good Old Blues Brothers,
would you to play it?
yeah,
exactly. Who would you to play at Bob's Country Bunker until the Blues Brothers turned up? But he's been, it is one of those people that it's a sad passing, because he was everywhere, and it's looking through his list.
He helped movies fly forward.
Oh, Maniac Cop 2.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
Ernest Goes to Jail.
Nothing was above or below this man's league.
Exactly. No. He was Angela's hairdresser in Married to the Mob.
He was the consummate character actor. He was in everything.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He was in
Chips. Oh my god!
He was in Chips. He was in Dallas. He was in
Knight Rider.
He was in Incredible Hulk TV series. There was a TV series of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, apparently, and he was in it.
And he was also in BJ and the Bear.
There we go. That was he was Hammer in BJ and the Bear. So, you know, he was in Westerns. There was not a genre that he didn't touch. And Star Trek has put up, I think, one of his earliest roles. He was a character called Adam in The Way to Eden, which is the original Star Trek series.
It's a classic.
And if you go to the Star Trek website, StarTrek.com now, there's actually one of the top stories is a picture of him and a little tribute, and it's probably one of the nicest tributes for him out there at the moment, because it's very early, and him in full costume, it's great. But again, look, you
he
won't
had a
be able
to harp and stuff in that, didn't he? He was in a band. Yeah, it was very funny.
It's hard
stupid
to find a
cape.
So I
have a picture of him here.
Oh, there he is. It's hard. You'll probably recognize him. It's hard to find a movie from the last 30, a cult movie, I should say, from the last 30 years that he hasn't been a part of in some way, shape, or form. So it is a sad passing.
Yes.
And
as far as film geeks are concerned, we know him.
Yeah.
And so it is a sad moment for us.
And, you know, so we couldn't let the show go by without acknowledging that.
No, we don't generally do obits on this show of everybody, but when somebody important moves on, you sit there and go, it deserves a mention. Okay. So rest in peace, Charles Napier.
Absolutely.
You will be missed, as Hollywood Babylon would say. All right. So we have email. Zed has written us an email, Josh, and this is where it comes to you. It says, hey, sentient AR drone, and Josh, Dave, Richard, random cast member, if available. I'm a little out of sync as I'm writing this email about 1 week late, so most of the early feedback is from 57. The latter part of this email is from 58. It's a very long email. We're going to kind of jump around it a little bit. But he says, nice choices on the lists. Although I thought there'd be some bigger talking or non-talking points. This is about worst movies.
All right.
He says, why no Wolverine? Or Minority Report? Damn it, Josh. I thought you'd take every opportunity to try and vault that coaster. That way it can never be spoken of again.
Well, you see, I understand it, and I understand the reasoning behind your statement, and my reasoning for not bringing them up is because I don't think they should even get to the point where they do get vaulted, because I think these films should never be spoken
on. I think you misunderstood.
Vaulted films seems to imply that we love a film
exactly.
so much
that we don't talk about it. Or that we talk about it so much it deserves some sort of a credit, whereas this film was just so fucking mediocre that it just broke my mind, because it was just like, how do you take a concept so cool and fuck it so royally? So that's the reason that I don't go near those films, because they don't deserve the credit.
Okay, so go. On that note though,
right,
he does say to you that the next five lists to try and get Minority Report vaulted should be five movies starring Tom Cruise, five movies that would be better if Tom Cruise died in them, 5 movies with bullshit technology, 5 movies about minorities, and 5 movies Josh hates.
You know, some of those lists I might actually want to do. Just saying.
Now, he also goes on about 58, which was the last episode, and he says, "You bastards."
Wait, so that's a collective bastards?
You bastards. Collective.
Why am I always the one that gets attacked? No.
I reckon, I don't think I'm part of that.
Yeah. No. This is you bastards.
I make the most outlandish statements. I'm aware of that.
I love this one, though. He says, episode 58, "You bastards, do you know how hard it is to listen to this podcast at work? Everyone looks at you weird when you fall off your chair laughing. Damn near broke my BlackBerry playbook."
And as I said, when you told me about that earlier in the week, I think that should be your tagline for the show. Be up on Geek Actually, damn near broke my BlackBerry playbook.
I think so. So yes, he goes on. But look, he does a quick review of Zookeeper, and I won't read you a whole review, but I think you get the point. Just by this introduction, he says,
Shittery shit.
"So while you guys were moving, I saw Zookeeper. I can't believe you guys skipped it."
Okay.
Says, "It would have made for a great review. We got into the cinema, and when the film rolled, we were on the floor. It was hilarious, mind-blowing, frenetic. I couldn't believe it. Then the trailers ended, and I wanted to hang myself."
Nicely done, dude. Nicely done.
So, and he goes on to actually talk about how it's worse than Minority Report plus Wolverine plus Halloween 6 plus Abduction.
Jesus
Christ. Wow, that's some list you got going there. Okay?
Easy, mate. Easy. I might have to take that at some stage.
So we will thank you very much for that email. Sorry, we're going to abridge it because we've got to move on.
Can I interrupt quickly? A bit of breaking news.
Yep.
We were talking about this before the show. This has literally just come across the wire. 20th. This is not film related strictly, but I think it's worth mentioning.
Oh, we should do a background on this first, though. The background on this is that The Simpsons got an ultimatum this week. Fox basically said, "We love The Simpsons, but we can't afford it anymore."
Mm.
So they basically said, if the cast doesn't take a 45% pay cut, they're canceling the show. Now, you just got an update.
Update is that Fox has renewed The Simpsons for 2 more years.
Wow!
Which will take it up to its 25th season, which is great news because then it's a quarter of a century this show has been on the air. In the words of Homer Simpson, "Woohoo! I outlasted Andy Rooney."
Question is, did they take the pay cut though?
It doesn't say. This is the official Fox press release, so no, it probably doesn't say it.
We
in
need
there.
To find out more about that. I want to know if they took a 45% pay cut.
But yeah, and next year, in February next year, The Simpsons is going to celebrate its 500th episode.
That's pretty spectacular.
So I thought I'd just quickly mention that because it is a massive thing, and The Simpsons have had a film. So
that's pretty spectacular. And here it is, a show we're not doing news on. Uh-huh. All right, we have an email here from Ben R. Actually, who says, "Hey, David, Josh, and Richard. Great list of 5 last show on movies you never see again. The discussion was very intense and interesting. While I did not agree all the time, it was still intriguing to hear the reasons behind the choices. Mm. I have 2 of my own. Lilia Forever, a very dark movie that is absolutely great but so depressing, I rooted for the character to commit suicide when she was considering it. And the other is The English Patient, which is so boring. I have stated for the record that I will only watch it again if my girlfriend forces me. But even then, she must let me read a book while listening to music while it is playing, and we will get to have sex afterwards. Keep up the good work."
Well, at least you have protocols for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm impressed by that.
Is that Seinfeld episode where Elaine is the only person who hates The English Patient, but she can't tell people this, and I think she ends up seeing it about 4 times by the end of the episode. She keeps getting dragged to this thing after and after. I felt for her.
The English Patient, I always remember not The English Patient but The Horse Whisperer. The joke in basketball when they run up to the pitcher with a tape recorder with the audiobook from The Horse Whisperer, and the guy just goes, "They have a pillow ready." English Patient, I thought, was dull. Man. Tristan also wrote to us. Tristan has submitted some for the Geek Show as well, but also wrote to us, and I won't read the whole thing because it is a little bit long, but just want to say, "Hi, guys. The other week I heard Josh mention that he was going to watch American Gothic. Then I heard him mention he was watching it on the last show. I have to say, I watched this when I was in high school. When it came out, I thought it was a fantastic show. I watched it for as much as the TV station would allow me, and to hear it being talked about again got me excited. No one I know has forgotten about No one I know would know of the show, let alone remember it. I just had to thank Josh for reminding me about the show, which I hadn't forgotten about."
It's weird, man. The only problem that I have with it at this stage is I'm struggling a little bit with how badly it's dated, because it is trying to be quite horrific, you know, and it's on obviously a kind of TV sort of a it's stuck in that TV world, so it can't do stuff. It feels a little nulled for someone that's seen things like things like Hostel and stuff like that. It's like when you've seen such epic levels of stuff, it's like unless the acting or the suspense manages to hold you, then you're not going to. But I'm only a few episodes in, so I'll get back to you on that.
Okay, and the last thing he wanted to point out, though, was a trivial bit, which was he said that I think it is worth mentioning that Lucas Black, the young kid, who I thought did a really good job in the show, is also the lead character in Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
No, and that was, I immediately noticed that because the kid's face has just not aged. He just looks exactly the same. Anyway,
cool. Moving on. All right, so that's our feedback. Let's do our list of five, guys. We'll get out of here because we are running a little bit longer than I expected. We're still on time, though. So let's see how fast we can do our list of five, all right?
I got it ready.
My number five is Ed 209 from RoboCop. That walking, talking bastard. I wanted to put RoboCop, but he's not technically a robot. So I decided that Ed 209 was a nice choice. And come on, let's face it, that's badass robot.
Yeah.
Your number five.
My number five is probably the only one that you won't see coming is Woody Allen in Sleeper.
Oh, I didn't even think of it. Nice. Excellent work. Excellent work. Didn't even think of that. Oh, Woody Allen again. See, I got to get some more Woody Allen films. My wife was saying to me, we should have a Woody Allen festival. I was like, yes.
I'll be around for that.
Josh, number five.
Okay, no one's going to know this one at all, but let me explain a 2 second of backlog for this. I actually just love this robot because I think it's the worst designed robot ever made. And when I saw it, I fell off my seat. I actually guffawed and just fell down. I was like, you can't be serious. It's from Logan's Run. The robot is called Box.
Yes. Box. I almost put Box on my list.
I'm never going to be able to get the chat room to be able to see that.
I almost put Box on my list. You're not going to be able to make that work.
Box is just...
He's a big silver box with a head and arms.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Whatever that head was made from, it looks like someone's just got someone's face and then just stuck over...
Tinfoil.
He was a very polite robot.
I don't care. He has like mirrors on the front of him and is like, I mean, seriously, in the 50s and 60s we had better robots
than Box was an atrocious robot, but he was fun.
That's my number five.
Fantastic. Box from Logan's Run. Okay, my number four is Ash from Alien, played by Ian Holm. Not Bishop, the first one.
Well, it's funny because I'm going to skip straight to my number four because my number four is Bishop from Aliens.
Well, there you go. So we both got an Alien reference.
I avoided it because I knew it was going to be
I thought about Bishop, and I thought, no, actually, I think Ian Holm as Ash was so much creepier. Such a creepy robot.
And I agree with you because I think he is a creepier robot, and I think the scenes where he is trying to kill... Ripley. Sorry, spoilers if you haven't seen this.
Film's 30 years old. Film. Get on
you know
with
what,
it.
Man? If you're watching a geek show and you haven't seen Aliens, piss off.
Yeah.
But not really. We love you.
Keep
piss off, but bring your friends. when he's trying to kill with a roll up.
Playboy.
It is a brilliant scene, and that is so creepy. But
And the scene where he's once his head is off. And they're turning his head back on, and he's gurgling, and it's like, it's awesome.
I just wanted to print this because Susan, my girlfriend, said to me this. The lovely Susan said this to me this morning. For her, the test of a robot, a good robot in a film, is one that you like and you care about enough to overcome the fact that they're not a real person per se. And the ones at the top of my list, two other ones on my list here, will a good demonstration to that. Bishop for me was such. I mean, it's Lance Henriksen for God's sake, and he's such a lovable person anyway. Well, I don't know if lovable is the right person.
Not a word I would have applied to Lance Henriksen.
But I can't help but like the guy.
Yeah,
you know, and Ian Holm is brilliant. You know,
there was a certain menace to Lance Henriksen's character though, because you were never sure if he was good or bad.
Bad, and certainly in Aliens, when they bring him back, albeit however briefly, in Alien 3, in two characters. Mm. He does say, I mean, they bring him in the AVP films and kind of just ruin the whole thing for me. He wasn't a robot in that. But as Bishop, he is such a great character. And, you know, there's that scene where he's doing the five-fingered... what's it called? Five-finger fillet?
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. I love Bishop. And he's an obvious choice.
Bishop was good. Yeah. I preferred Ash.
I think, I can see
because I disagree with Susan. I think the sign of a good robot is whether or not it's memorable. And that's the thing.
Yeah, no.
And so with Ash, there were certain things about that character. And when he first gets hit by Yaphet Kotto, and he's got that little tick where he's kind of licking his lip, and he's kind of doing it. It's like you sit there going, there's something very off-putting about Ian Holm's performance.
In that film. It's a brilliant performance, and I would agree with you. I just got a text. It's probably from Susan.
Saying to get stuff for me, probably.
No, it's not. It's the second bit of spam I've had on my phone in the last 2 minutes.
Wow. Something, well done.
Something from called Jam. So Jam, if you're sending me texts, fuck off.
All right, let's keep moving. Josh, your number four.
My number four is Johnny Cab.
Johnny Cab.
Johnny Cab.
I forgot about Johnny Cab.
Come on, guys. Seriously, as if you didn't look at that and go, that's what robots are going to be like in the future. They're just going to be passive aggressive and annoying. And just like, I just adore
Thanks
him.
Thanks for the ride.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot all about Johnny Cab.
Period. I'm sorry. Done.
No, done. No. All right. My number three is Maximilian from The Black Hole. The big red mean-ass bitch robot that's got the little spinning blades in the front. That thing terrified me when I was a kid. So yeah I saw a black hole when I was 12 or something like that, and it was like, what the fuck? And he pretty much tore up the inside of Anthony Perkins, which is kind of fun. But anyway, your number three.
My number three, and I think it's shared with Josh, is Wally.
Well, it's actually my number two. So there you go.
We'll talk about it now.
Oh, God. Like, just no emotional connection have I ever felt for something so small and obviously metal-related. And I mean, somebody that's further up my list has a lot in common with this particular robot.
I know who's coming.
Exactly. But, like, I just adore it. And it's just so cute. And he's just so emotional, even though he has no emotions.
He is Pixar's greatest creation. He really is.
No, without question.
And it's amazing how much, and I think I just got another text message from Jan. No, I didn't. So Susan said she only, I only like nice robots.
Oh, okay, that's Susan fair. See, she's telling me to get stuffed.
And it's, yeah, no, look, I everything about Wally, it is amazing how much, it is a character that doesn't have the human expressions in the sense that, like, you know, animal characters did. It has these very fixed things in there, but what they managed to do with just a couple of moving gears, it shows Pixar's mastery.
Yeah, it shows why.
And there's so emotion and so much life in eyes that are essentially dead.
And it's interesting how they managed to do it so well in WALL-E, yet but with Cars, where it actually had faces on them,
couldn't do it.
And I had no connection to Cars, where WALL-E is. I mean, like, we all cried in WALL-E, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's just... Yeah.
I did.
Eva.
I did.
Eva.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
No, it's, look, it's wonderful. And the reaction from him when he rolls over the cockroach. Oh, hello, we just lost our screen. What the hell's going on?
Just going to sleep, man. It'll come back.
Come back. One. There we go.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
Wow, that scared the hell out of me. all right, so that's your number three.
Three and your number two.
My number two, so it's your number two.
Go.
My number two, sorry.
My number two is WALL-E, so let's move straight on.
Is Roy Batty from Blade Runner.
Oh, man, it almost made my list.
I will say that in my honorary mentions, I didn't put Roy Batty, but I put Leon from Blade Runner, because Leon for me was the... I love that quote where he goes, "Wake up, time to die.
There's that quote, I'm trying to remember it from the end, when he's talking about what he's seen with...
Starships off the River Orion, and oh, that's great.
Scene. Absolutely, and great speech, great input from pictures? Him. I almost actually, what I was going to put on my list was I was going to put the main character. Because I don't want to get controversial on this.
Yeah, no,
some people
would
say it's not, some would say it is, and you know.
Well, in fact, like, Harrison Ford says no. Ridley Scott has categorically said yes.
Yes, absolutely.
But you know, I think Roy Batty is not only a great robot, but he's a great character and a great villain.
And it's his best performance ever.
This is Rutger Hauer, of course. And it is... The little picture they've got here of Roy Batty is when he's stuck his head through a wall. And look, you know, this is right to the end. Right to the end, when the main character is being beaten to a bruise. He is breaking the fingers of our hero.
Yeah,
you still love this guy. Yeah. Like, he's the most compelling thing on screen.
Yeah, he's amazing. I want more life,
and that's it. I think that's why you like him so much, because his motivation is that he wants to live.
Oh, what is it? Only you could see what I have seen with your eyes.
Yeah.
No, great choice. And yeah. I batted around the replicants for a while because I also really like Pris. Mm. I really like the relationship between her.
It's
a great film. If you haven't seen Blade Runner, go see Blade
Runner. What are you doing listening to this show?
Yeah, go see Blade Runner. But yeah, no, Roy Batty's fantastic choice. Josh, you're number two.
My number two is Moloch.
Moloch?
From Metropolis.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes.
Which is just, I don't know. There's always been something about it. It's like, it doesn't matter whether it's the robot itself or the incarnation with the skin over. It's just always been one of those characters that's just sat with me because I don't know whether it's the acting of the actual person, but there's just something
it's
so goddamn
iconic.
Creepy.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly iconic.
Yeah, exactly. And it looked mainly with that metal look. Mm. It was just, it's so early on and yet kind of you can see influence for almost everything since.
C-3PO.
You know? Oh, well, yeah, okay, if you want to get specific.
Yeah, you can see influences all over the place.
Absolutely, yeah. No, and I mean, that's the thing. It's not, you know, it's for me,
I agree.
It's just one of those
characters. I think it's a fantastic robot. Just an amazing thing. Have you actually sat and watched it yet?
No, I haven't touched it since. Dude, I haven't had 3 hours to watch a movie.
Yeah, the Blu-ray.
It is. It's a long cut, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's an extra 20 minutes.
I've got that sitting there
on
the shelf.
Yeah.
It's a dedication.
I got to buy that. All right, my number one,
I'm
going to
say. It's going to be a midday film, I think.
Yes, my number one has got to be R2-D2.
Yeah, well, it's my number one, but I've shared it with C-3PO because I felt that they're inseparable.
Well, no, see, I put R2-D2 because I think R2-D2 is a badass little robot.
If I had to choose.
Yeah, and I think it's the one character that not only survived the prequel trilogy, they made him better. Yeah. They actually gave him stuff to do. And the fact that they made him a little badass was just, I think R2-D2 is just brilliant.
Because 3PO doesn't come off well. In fact, I think what happened was with 3PO, by the time of the second film, when Lucas realized that we really hated Jar Jar, he started giving 3PO some of Jar Jar's lines. It's something Anthony Daniels actually complained about.
Yeah.
He said, this is not a 3PO line. This is a Jar Jar
line. Oh, what a drag.
What a drag. I'm beside myself.
Not good.
Look, I agree with you. These guys obviously were based on the serfs in The Hidden Fortress.
The
Akira Kurosawa film. And they are the lowest common denominator in the Star Wars universe and our eyes. To the whole thing.
They are the only consistent thing throughout the entire film.
And like, you know, in the original trilogy, they are the most memorable things in it. They don't change. They haven't been replaced or altered in any way, except for 3PO is a bit digitized in the prequel trilogy. Otherwise, Kenny Baker's still around.
Yeah, and the fact that they actually made R2-D2, they kept, in the prequel trilogy, they kept giving little surprises with him. Like, suddenly he has little jets to fly, and suddenly he does this, and suddenly, and you just sit there go, you are a badass little droid, you know? All those little panels that you've looked at on that body, wondering what's behind all those things, suddenly we're starting to see all that stuff, you know?
And he doesn't have a bad motivator.
No! And he's smart, you know? And I love the fact that at the end of the prequel trilogy, they say, take the protocol droid and wipe his mind. Nothing about R2-D2. So theoretically, in
R2 is the only one who knows everything
that's gone on in the entire trilogy.
Absolutely.
So R2-D2 number one all the way. Yeah. robot of the century.
Absolutely. And can I mention a couple of my also?
I've just got number one.
Oh yeah, you
Josh
don't want to do that one. As well because that's on it. Yeah,
my bad.
Now. There is a reasoning behind this because as a film, it's probably not that great a film, but I am one of those kids that played this film so many times that I actually stretched the VCR tape out to the point where it was no longer useful. And it is, of course, Johnny Five.
Short Circuit, baby.
Oh, man. Short Circuit is number just five. One of those freaking...
Disassemble, Stephanie.
Yeah. It's just, there's something about the dialogue that's just ridiculously
compliance.
Camp, but when somebody
nice software.
But when somebody says robot... It's the first place my mind goes. My mind just goes to that image of him. And it's like, it's always been there. He was cool. He had a few movies. They were all terrible. But as a kid, like Real Steel, it was just so good to me.
I loved Short Circuit.
Yeah,
and it was just cheeky enough that even as a kid, I could still tell that there were adult jokes in there that I probably shouldn't know.
And the fact that you've got a white actor in blackface, essentially. how did they get away with
that?
Have
you watched it recently? It's like, it is so racist. Like,
thank you for repeatedly throwing me to the ground.
It's you know, unbelievable.
How did they get away with making Fisher Stevens Indian? But, I mean, really.
But the robot himself is great.
The robot's fantastic.
Yeah absolutely. And I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. I am aware there are problems now, but at the time when I was a child, I was just like...
Look, I've actually seen Short Circuit relatively recently, probably within the last 5 years, still makes me laugh. It's a very, it's really racist, cute film.
Because I don't remember any of that.
Well, that character. It's that character, because they got Fisher Stevens, a white actor. They basically blacked him up and made him an Indian with a really broad fake Indian accent. And they made him say all these basically racial stereotype, you know, lines. And he's sitting there and go, wow, how did they even get away with that? Because nobody even thought about it back then. But now we look back on it and go, wow, that's almost as bad as Mickey Rooney playing, you know, Japanese in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Absolutely.
You know? it's such a racial stereotype. It's really horrendous, really. But
wow.
But it's funny. You know, and that's the thing. You kind of get away with it because it's funny, and Fisher Stevens is so talented that you kind of get away with it. But
you see, again, maybe as a kid, I just didn't connect it.
No.
Oh, there you go.
That's the thing. And in the 80s, when the film came out, nobody really paid much attention to it. Everybody thought it was funny. Mm. It's not until our politically correct years later.
Is it worse or better than The Party?
It's about the same league.
Same league.
Yeah, birthday num-nums, you know.
Yeah. Does anybody know if you can block texts on an iPhone?
I'm not sure.
We will try and figure that out for you later.
Because, Jan, that's the third text I've had from you in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Fuck the hell off.
Dude, stop saying it, man. They're just going to keep sending stuff to you. Hey, hello, Susan's in the chat room.
Oh, hey, hello, Susan. Susan. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Susan.
I think it's like Hello Kitty, but it's Hello Susan.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm glad she finally joined the chat room.
Thanks, Susan.
Now her private messages to you on your phone will now be public messages to all of us.
She says hello.
Hello.
All right.
Well, that's it. We've done a list.
You came in as the show's almost over, Susan.
We got some honorary mentions here. I've got to throw out honorary mentions. I had Leon from Blade Runner and Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet. Which was basically the prototype for the B9 in Lost in Space.
Right.
So, you know, I think it should be mentioned. You've got...
We've mentioned Johnny Five already. I mean, HAL, of course, from 2001.
Is he a robot, though?
Well, the thing is, I took the very, very broad sense of robot.
That's fair
there.
Enough, okay.
But the other one I did want to mention, it was almost on the list.
Sorry.
Ooh.
I can't do that, Dave.
I can't do that. Well, the other one that was on the list right up until the last minute was the robot gunslinger from Westworld.
Dude, oh, Yul Brynner! Oh, yeah. Forgot all about him. Mm. Damn it! Yes.
So could have actually been one of the hookers from Westworld.
Yeah,
they were quite attractive.
No, Yul Brynner.
Yul
Brynner, man.
I will try.
Talk about menacing robot. Mm. That's a menacing robot. It just keeps coming.
And this is pre-Terminator.
Yeah, no, Westworld was fabulous. And I noticed nobody put the Terminator here.
No, it's interesting
because we all knew it was. It's there.
Yeah, question is, all right, let's go around the table, though. We didn't put him on the list, but if we were going to pick a Terminator, which one is it? I'm going to say T-100. It's got to be the original.
Yeah, it's because it's that menacingness to it. It's like the rest are all right, but it's that unstoppableness.
Mm. I'm going to disagree slightly. I'm going to go for... was it still a T-100 in the second film, though? Was it still
the same
model? It was
technically a T-100, but it was
captured. The modified version. I'm going to go for the modified version, simply because I've seen the second one more than I've seen the first one.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got all the classic lines. He looks cooler. He doesn't have the bad 80s hair. you know, I agree with you, because the first one is frightening in its thing, but I keep keeping with my favourite robots theme rather than just five really good robots and the robots that I like. You know, he is the hero in the second film. Mm. Obviously, Schwarzenegger's career had changed by that stage as well. But he is the hero in that second
film. Here's a trivia for you. Did you know that in the first Terminator, Schwarzenegger was actually offered the Kyle Reese character? And he turned it down because he didn't want to play another good guy. He wanted to play the bad guy. And he thought the Terminator robot suited him better. And so he chose to do the Terminator. So he could have been Kyle Reese.
Wow.
So there's a little bit of trivia for you. Talk about that would have changed his career path, I think, don't you?
Absolutely.
Susan said, robots are good when you cry when they get shut down. Now, think about the reaction, the two reactions you had to Arnold Schwarzenegger's demise. At the beginning of the first one and the beginning of the second one.
I actually am one of the very few people in the world, and this is going to be really controversial, but I'm one of the very few people in the world who actually prefers Terminator 1 to Terminator 2. Mm. I actually think the first Terminator is a far more original film, and it's got that sheer horror element to it. And I found when I watched Terminator 2, I thought technically it's a brilliant film. Technically it was a marvel when it came out.
Yeah.
I hated the fact that they turned Schwarzenegger into a good guy.
See,
and I hated... the demise of him when he went down and going, "Wow, now I understand why you cry," and the whole thumbs up. Yeah. It didn't move me at all.
Really?
Hated it.
I
kept thinking, just lower the crane faster.
You're a horrible human
being. Melt the man down. No, I liked him as a bad guy. I liked him as the bad guy.
I agree with you, and I think that's a valid thing. It's the same thing with...
And that's not to say I didn't like Terminator 2. I think Terminator 2 has some really good stuff in it. But I think Terminator 1, I prefer Terminator 1 as a film, as its entirety.
I suppose it's like, but like Aliens. I mean,
I prefer Alien.
Alien as well. Yeah. And a lot of people would disagree because James Cameron, people got a hard on for Cameron.
Oh, I think they're very different films as well.
That's the thing. Well, so is T1 and T2 for that matter as well. One is fighting against the impossible odds with no, they're all humans and they've got
though, if you actually break down Terminator 1, there was another review I read on it many years ago where they actually said when you break Terminator 1 down, it is a horror movie. It actually every beat in that film is a stalker film. It is Halloween. It is Friday the 13th.
Absolutely.
It's a stalker film. And it's brilliantly structured as such. And then he turned it into a sci-fi epic.
By the time he made the second, when was the first one made? Was 84?
No, later than that. 86, I want to say. 87.
So was that before or after Aliens?
It was before. It was his first major film so after Piranha 2, which he didn't really direct.
In the meantime, he's gone on and made big action film in the sense of,
It's about 84, actually.
Yeah, so he's made Aliens since then. And then he made The Abyss after that, which was more of a contemplative film.
And I really like The Abyss.
And I quite like The Abyss. But then obviously, but I don't think it was very well critically received.
Yeah, so he did The Terminator, and then he did... I'm in the wrong thing. I want director. Here we go. As a director, he did Terminator, followed by Aliens, followed by The Abyss, followed by Terminator 2.
And I think so with Terminator 2, he's kind of gone back to what he knew and what was already a success, a bigger, actionier version of...
And that was one of my problems with the film, was the fact that he took what was essentially an $8 million film, and then its sequel was $150 million.
And a lot of that went on that state-of-the-art.
Absolutely, CGI and all I could think was... I feel like there's a great line from Star Trek from Scotty where he says, the more you overtake the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain. Mm. And I feel like he overtook the plumbing. He took what was a really simple concept and made it so much bigger than it had to be.
And you know what? This is exactly my problem with Avatar, because he's remade Aliens in a lot of ways. He's got the same characters. He's planted them in a bigger thing. And he's just made what is Fern Gully the most epic wank of all time. And this is where I think maybe Terminator 2 is the turning point for Cameron, because even though he made what I think is a very underrated True Lies
I love True Lies,
But everything after that had to be bigger and better than
and that's my problem with Cameron. In fact, I think he is a talented action filmmaker. There's no doubt he knows how to direct an action scene. You know, I mean, we know that. But I think the problem with Cameron is he needs to work on a smaller scale.
Titanic, I mean, it's... should have been an hour and a half film. We know the ending.
Somebody pointed out it took longer to actually watch the film than it does to actually sink the boat. You know what I mean? The actual boat didn't take that long to go down. You know what I mean? So, Titanic is an incredibly overblown film. Damn it, did it again. What's going on there?
Titanic. They can't hear that, David.
Sorry?
They can't hear that the screen's gone dark.
They might be able to see it, though. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening on their end. So.
Oh, there's only like four people left.
Whatever. Cameron is one of those directors who I find incredibly frustrating because his best films were his low budget stuff. You look at The Terminator for $8 million. You look at at Aliens. Aliens only cost $18 million or something like that. And he actually said no money, had to find ways to do it. When he said he was going to make an army of aliens, Fox scoffed at him and said, how are you going to do that? And he turned around and said, no, I can do this. And he did the entire film. If you watch Aliens, there's never more than 8 aliens on screen at any time.
Yeah.
And yet you are made to feel like there are millions of them, right? Yeah. Now he can literally put millions of aliens on the screen. He wouldn't be able to do Aliens anymore. And it was those constraints that made him more creative.
And I think that's true of so many directors,
such
as Spielberg. You know, Jaws is still one of his finest films to date.
Close
Encounters. And he didn't have the budget or the technology to make. Now he would make a CGI shark.
Yeah.
Now, you know.
And it would probably look real and it would probably look great. And, you know, and I'm not even arguing any of that. I'm just saying what worked in that film was the fact that half the film we didn't see the shark.
Absolutely. And he concedes to that now. But he wanted to show the shark.
Yeah.
And so I think the problem is when these directors get so big, that, boy, are we off topic. The problem is when these directors...
You know
get,
what, though? People seem to like it when we go off topic. So.
But when the problem is when these directors get so big that they have final cut, I think there are some very talented people who probably shouldn't have final cut because they're not... They're filmmakers and they're artists, but they're not necessarily good judges of money, one. but also they're not great judges. I mean, like, you know, really, Titanic was a massive, massive hit, but it was also the most expensive movie ever made at the time. It could have been his Heaven's Gate or
and
whatever.
And what is the most expensive film made now? Avatar.
Avatar.
So, you know, and what was the most expensive film made before Titanic? Terminator 2. Yeah. So it's like everyone is him.
And it's almost like he has to make the record. Is Avatar 2 going to be the most expensive film ever made? Possibly, because they trust him now as he's made four hits in a row or whatever.
Mm. It's going to come back and bite him on the ass one
look,
day.
You know, and again, I think people might realize if he doesn't step up the game with Avatar 2, people are going to realize how hollow the first one was. It doesn't have three films in it. It is not.
No, I never thought it should have a sequel. It's a standalone one-off. Let it go.
You know? But he, like every other director behind a successful movie, goes, "Oh, it was always meant to be a trilogy. The Matrix was always meant to be a trilogy. No, it wasn't. No. You were surprised by it and made two shit sequels because you didn't have the script. If you'd had the scripts in the first place,
you go.
You know what, Alice Wachowski? Hola, bitches, I'm back. No, but the thing is, a group of, and to tie this back to the list, some good one-off characters do not a franchise make.
Yeah.
And this is the mistake that so many big-budget films have made lately, that they have to have a sequel if they're successful. No. Go off and use the same cast, and if you want to, and the same writers and the same director.
Yeah, because that works so well for the Fish Called Wanda people.
Well, yeah, no, but it's... But if it's
sorry, I just flipped
the whole argument. I was on a rant, David. Never interrupt me in the middle of a hoedown.
Never interrupt me with a good fact.
Never let facts get in the way of the good story.
All right, we got to get out of here, guys. That was our little rant for the day. Wasn't that fun?
Susan's turned the chat room into a cat chat room. Oh, so that's fantastic.
And that's got to be a sign that it's time to go. Josh, tell people where they can find more of you on the internet.
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Go over and check it out. We also have a YouTube channel that we've just recently revamped, so go over and check that out as well. RawDLC.com in general is where you'll find all this stuff. So go over there and check that out. And I'm all around.
And pimp the other one too while you're at it.
Which one?
The other one.
The
hip
Hip Hop Net Online.
I'm gonna force you to pimp that shit.
Hip Hop Net Online is a hip hop based website where we just very quickly and very cleanly, in only a few sentences, keep you up to date with everything you need to know about hip hop.
Fantastic. And Richard?
As usual, you can find me at therealbits.com. That's RELBITS.com. It's a film website, strangely enough, where I have many more rants, much like the one that you just heard. You can also find me on Twitter, where I rant constantly at DVDBits.
Hooray!
Yeah, I was about to say, to find more rants from Richard, go to therealbits.com.
If you enjoyed the last rant, please go to therealbits.com.
What the hell's going on? Oh, that's The Matrix. He's saying they completely lost the feel of the first one.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. There were two different movies, even between the second film and the third film.
Thank you, Reverse Soundtrack.
Reverse Soundtrack.
We are watching the chat room, believe it or not.
Even between the second and third film, in that case, they completely forgot what they were doing.
I think my son is basically saying he liked the other Matrix films, which is fair. I mean, you know, if you like them, you like them.
I know
good.
People who adore them. I just thought they sucked.
I quite like the sequels to The Matrix. I just don't think of them as sequels to The Matrix. No, I think The Matrix is a standalone film, and if you want to, you can watch this extended universe. It's kind of like reading extended universe Star Wars novels. You just don't take them as too serious, you know?
I don't like anything about them at all.
I think visually they've got some fun stuff in them. The big battle scene.
Yeah, Monica Bellucci's in one of them, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, you can find out more about this show, us, me on Twitter, merchandise, t-shirts like this one, mugs like, oh, I don't have my mug here anymore. Anyway, mugs like that one that's on the back shelf up there. Mm-hmm. You know, all that wonderful stuff. Just go to geekactually.com, follow the big follow us button. It's got all the various links for all the things you need to find out. A couple of shout-outs to our friends out there. Charlie and Brad, love Good Day, Sir. It's a great podcast. Find it at reboundradio.com. And Charlie, Also has another podcast on there called Movie Matchup, which is a lot of fun, which I've been listening to. I quite like that. WeekendRonan.com is the home of The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. They get on and they review movies on their podcast, but they like to drink a little bit while they do it, and it's a lot of fun.
We should totally do that.
We should. No, but then it would be deemed as copying, but what we should do is get them on our show again, because we've had Fox on our show.
We we'll take it up a notch. We'll do this on heroin.
Easy now.
Film actually on crack. and you can find out more about our cartoonist Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He's the one who did all of our cover art, and he's wonderful, but he's away at the moment, I believe, but hopefully he'll be doing some more work for us soon. We did open the show with an original clip from we opened our show with a clip of, so I'm getting tired, aren't I? We opened the show we opened the show with a clip from the original Footloose, and we're closing the show with a little bit of Blake Shelton's reworking of the classic Footloose song from the 2011 remake. So that's the music we're going out on. Damn it.
All right.
Got it out. All right. If there is nothing else to add... No.
Orange
whip.
Orange whip.
In that
it's
case,
getting hot in here and I want to get out.
In that case, we're going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week. Bye now. I'm turning it loose. Welcome back. Sorry, we're just going to borrow you for one more minute here. We have Nicholas McVeigh, the little geek, in the studio for a little bonus segment for Real Steel, because you did see Real Steel, and with family films, we like to give that perspective of a child. So tell us, Nicholas, what did you think of Real Steel?
I thought it was excellent.
What I said. So what is it exactly that got you going about this film?
I liked Adam.
You liked Adam. Yeah. See, Adam had heart, man. Adam had heart.
Yeah. I also liked, you know, the fighting and stuff.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I sat next to you during this movie, and you were like, hands up, and you were like...
I always liked that at the end. You can't help it.
You were really getting right into it. So you... I think you actually said to me at one point that you... you just wanted them to stop hitting him. So tell us a little bit about what you thought of the film. What did you think of the kid?
He was okay.
He was okay? Yeah. Did you relate to him?
Yeah, I did. I liked when he drank all those Dr. Pepper spoilers. He was all hyped up and everything.
And what about the dancing? Did you find that cheesy or did you like the dancing?
Oh, I liked the dancing. I thought it was kind of cool.
Well, there you go. See, the dancing worked.
And I completely disagree with Josh.
Them's fighting words.
I completely disagree with him at all.
Oh, yeah, Josh.
He's got smacked down.
Yeah. Josh got pwned. Hey. all right. So have you got anything you want to add?
Well, I want to add that... this is another kind of rebuttal to Josh. He was meant to get up. The robot was actually built to get up.
He's a sparring bot. Yeah. That's right. He was a sparring bot. You could argue that as well. I think what Josh's complaint was, when he got up, he didn't feel damaged enough. He didn't feel like he'd been hurt. He felt like, okay, he's got up and he's going straight back into it. How did you feel about that?
He looked like he was damaged.
Fair enough. I actually thought he did too. I mean, at one point he was smoking.
Yeah,
he was pretty beaten up by the end. But, you know, that's, you know, everybody has their own opinion.
Yeah.
And Josh, it didn't get to Josh, but I think it got to you a lot more. So if you had to go out and recommend to your friends at school, would you recommend this film?
Absolutely.
There you go. That's the recommendation. All right.
If you want to put that on the poster, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Little Geek says... recommend it to my friends. have you got anything you want to pimp out before we go?
Not really.
Yeah?
Where can we find you?
Your YouTube channel that you always tell me to pimp out.
Go to youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh.
Hey, there you go.
I'm still working on Smile. I know
you're close, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm close to finishing the animation.
Ah, very good. Okay, so Smile is your Batman film with Joker.
Yeah.
And it's looking pretty good. It's looking pretty good.
From what I've seen so far, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I think it will be, too.
After the animation, I still have to do like the post-production, the editing, special effects and stuff. Yeah. That might take at least half a month or a month or so.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one. It's got a lot of stuff happening in it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to wrap this puppy up now because it's been a long day and we're going to be done with it. So go to youtube.com/Nicky McVeigh if you want to see his animated films. And
I highly recommend them.
He highly recommends them. And you also highly recommend Real Steel.
Yeah, yep. I do.
Excellent. Very much. Thank you very much, Nicholas. We will see you the next time we have a family film.
Certainly.
Absolutely. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Lose your boots.
Everybody come for loose. Hey, I hope you enjoyed the show. And just a reminder that if you enjoyed Film Actually, you might also enjoy our geek podcast called Geek Actually, which you can also find on iTunes or at geekactually.com. It's our weekly nonsense podcast where we talk about tech and geek and fun things and food and just about everything else that we can think of. We have a lot of fun doing it, and we hope you come along and join us. You can also watch that live at geekactually.com/live. Everybody cut, everybody cut, everybody cut.